Dr. Cheryl Hillman, and you're listening to What Women Must Know. Thank you so much for joining me today for another opportunity to have an in-depth conversation. Particularly today, we have an important conversation in store for you. And I'm glad you're here because this show is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And certainly these days, we need the best information to help us navigate through challenging times that are occurring in our lives, in our communities, throughout the world. And that's why I'm particularly thrilled that we have a very special guest with us today. And we're going to be talking about COVID-19 and the Global Predators, which is the name of the new book that's about to be released by my guest, Dr. Peter Gregan. So I'm just going to jump right in. First of all, tell you a little bit about my guest, who I'm so honored to have here today. Dr. Peter Gregan is known as the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform work in the mental health field, but has now turned his attention to the misuse of science surrounding this COVID-19 epidemic and its origins in what he and his co-author, Ginger Gregan, have called global predators. And a little bit more about Dr. Gregan before we get into the topic and his book and his real purpose. Dr. Gregan is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist and former full-time consultant at the National Institute of Mental Health and part-time for the FAA. He has been approved as a medical expert in over 100 legal cases in state and federal courts on issues relating to adverse drug effects, drug approval, and the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA. He is the author of 24 medical, scientific, and best-selling popular books, as well as dozens of scientific articles. And his latest book and his latest passion, I would say, is the book he's been working on that's about to be released called COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. And we're going to give you more information about how you can get a free manuscript of the book and also go to his website, which is wearetheprey.com, to learn more about his research and to get that free manuscript. And having said all of that, it's such an honor and such a pleasure to welcome Dr. Peter Gregan to the show today. So, Peter, thank you so much for being here.
Well, Cheryl, I'm delighted to be on your show, and you and I have a lot in common. And one of the wonderful things is we both have shows on the Progressive Radio Network, and we've both known the owner of it, Gary Null, for a long time. I go back to 1972 or 3 with Gary Null when I was doing an anti-psychosurgery campaign. And he was one of the first people to dare have me on talking about why we shouldn't mutilate the brains of psychiatric patients.
You know, so I have followed you for a while, and I respect you because at some point in your career, a light must have gone off because what you have stood for is the truth about psychiatry, of how best to support people who are dealing with their psychiatric issues. And you've really taken a stand against the traditional approach of medication, surgery. I mean, you're really kind of an outlier to your profession. With great respect, I say that because you are truly a truth seeker and a truth teller. And I'm wondering, just to start off our conversation today, what was it that happened to you that kind of awakened you to a greater truth that you are so dedicated to right now?
Well, that is very interesting, and it relates a lot indirectly and now directly to COVID-19. I mean, the first thing was when I was 9 years old. I was 9 years old and my mother and father and I went to, took me to watch what was going to be a family movie at the movie theater. And in those days, they had something called Movie Tone News. It was still in black and white, and it was current news. And all of a sudden, they're showing Movie Tone News film, probably the first footage on the air like that in a theater, of the liberation of a Nazi extermination camp. And I'm Jewish, and I'm sitting there, 9 years old, and I'm watching a heap of Jews. I'm watching people, you know, dangling practically from the barbed wire, people who are emaciated, people who are dead. And I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. My parents would never talk about it. And I said to myself, well, I don't know what this is about, but they're not going to do that to me or my family. And that was like a background. Then my Uncle Dutch, and this all relates, folks, we got to recognize that what is going on here today smacks of the very same things that went on in Nazi Germany and the USSR, still go on in the USSR, and one of the leading forces in this COVID-19 is Communist China. Hang with me. I am not a conspiracy theorist. I've testified in over 100 trials in court. You've got to be very concrete to do that. I have a medical publisher. I published over 70 medical articles. You can't do that if you're a conspiracy theorist. For all of us who are involved in COVID-19, well, one of my dear friends, a cardiologist, published 600 papers and was a professor at Bin University. And when he saw what was going on at COVID-19, he did what a lot of us did. He said, this is more important than anything else I'm doing. I'm sorry, this looks like the end of medicine in the world. They won't even let us treat COVID-19 patients at home. Won't let us treat them until they're ready to die. And they're in the hospital. There's something weird going on. Nothing like this in the history of medicine, that you didn't have very available treatments for viruses. So go back again now. So then not long after, I guess, watching the film, my Uncle Dutch comes back from the war, and he describes liberating an extermination camp. So those were vivid images to me, how human beings could treat human beings and what I would never want to happen to me. I don't think I said to myself, and I'll do something about it if it ever happens again. I think it was beyond imagination that it would happen again. And of course, I didn't know it was always going on someplace in the world against some group was being exterminated. I didn't know that at that age. Well, then I'm a freshman at Harvard. And I'm thinking, I get into a special program, an honors program at Harvard. It wasn't enough I got into Harvard. I had to get into the program. And it's American history and literature. I'm going to be a historian, maybe go on and be a lawyer. I'm studying a lot, thinking a lot. And a friend comes in and says, Peter, you got to come volunteer at the State Mental Hospital. You're much too busy. We're studying you. It's not good for you. Come on, get out in the world. So very reluctantly, I didn't have a car. I get in the car with a bunch of my guys, probably only one of whom I knew. I was not very social in high school, not very social in college. I probably was really preoccupied with what I'm studying. And we get out to the state hospital, and we're going up this hill, and it's like this strange-looking fortress on a hill. I didn't know what to make of it. We go into the buildings. A nurse takes us, a group of maybe five of us, takes us into the where my friend had been volunteering, the women's violent ward. And it's like a scene from hell. I mean, at one point, literally, I watched one woman walk over to a sitting woman and smack her in the face and say something irrational, socked her in the face and walk away. And neither one of them showed an expression, not the woman who lit. I don't even know where the nurses were. I mean, there was hardly anybody on the ward. It was a cavern, basically. It was like a cement corridor. There was a TV not working up on a wall. And in the back of the same area was where the patients slept. And they went out to eat, if they were allowed to go out and eat. And somebody told me there was a former radical student lying on the floor in this room. And I think I was struck by God or something, because I didn't believe in God, and I certainly wasn't smart enough for this. But I looked at these people, and I said, "Dear, but for the grace of God, go I. What is going on here?" This is not how you treat people who have had a nervous breakdown. This isn't how you treat people who have been hurt, harmed. It doesn't even matter what's going on. You just don't treat people like this. This looks like my Uncle Dutch's description of the Nazi concentration camps. And the whole atmosphere was like it. The attitude of the doctors, who seldom came around, the attitude of the nurses, the aides, we learned, was brutal. One of the things that we did, I eventually ran the program. We had a lot of publicity. I won't get into that further than that. But we were recognized then as something very important. That was before the drug companies completely took over psychiatry. So my program probably lasted 20 years until in the 1990s, psychiatry really got taken over totally by the drug companies. So there was still opportunities to do social psychiatry. I think you could do communist psychiatry if you want. You certainly could do progressive psychiatry. You could do whatever you wanted to do. You could get training in alternatives, in other words. So from this experience, I'm already having an impact. We're working through a Harvard facility, and they've gotten us a very important psychiatrist at Harvard who's supervising us. We get tremendous support. I'm giving talks around the Northeast about it. I'm a college sophomore, junior by then, and I get an idea for a book, and pretty soon we have a book coming out with four of our names on it. It came out about 3 years after I finished. And it's like, this. I'm actually doing something good here. And I found something very strange about me and working with these people. I mean, I couldn't figure it out. But nobody ever got angry at me on these wards. None of these violent men or women ever got angry at me. Even when I was alone on the ward, which I often would be, because eventually I stole the nurse's keys. They thought I'd been given them, and I had them throughout my entire career there. I'd go into any ward I wanted. The most scared I ever was when I went on the men's violent ward to visit and talk to folks. And this huge guy, I'm only 5'4", probably less than that now. And this huge guy comes and stops and stares at me and says, "I smoke Lucky Strike." I thought, that's very nice. people sensed that they could somehow trust me, that I was okay. And people begged to do things for me when I'd go with this guy, "Take your watch." And thank God I let it happen. That watch got polished 3-4 times, very cheap watch, 3 or 4 or 5 times over my experience. My shoes got shined. Then I got messages put into my pockets. And so I went to the superintendent and I said, "I've got about 10 students. Now I'm running the program. And we think we could each have our own patient. We still want to, you know, help clean the wards, have parties, take people for it. We want to all have one person we also see each time we come." "You can't do that." I said, "We really want to do that." And he said, "You can't do that." And I said, "I think I could do it at Boston State Hospital," which was a much more famous hospital than his. And he said, "Well, all right." I said, "We have a social worker. He's wonderful, David. We'll work with him, and he'll give us 1 week of supervision for all of us." So we set this program up. We had about 15 students. They gave us patients they didn't think we could hurt because they were so bad. And we got just about every one of them out of the hospital, and most of them stayed out during my tenure when we finally wrote it up. And so we got to be really important. And we looked at something, you know, I mean, volunteers, the solution to a lot of mental health problems. And I still think it's true. But you see, pretty soon, when the drug companies take over, it's not pretty soon. I mean, this is, for God's sake, 1955, 54. Probably go on my first ward, my first months there, 1954. And I graduate in 58 and go to med school. This was profound. I could actually do something. I could actually sit with people and talk to them and understand them and just know that I had to be kind and gentle and never, never take offense, never be competitive. All the things that were so different than just being at Harvard or being me, maybe. And I decided I'd go into psychiatry, that I could do something in this profession. I could help reform this profession. I saw electroshock treatment. Well, I hadn't been trained, so I knew it was barbaric. You know, a person comes in fighting, being dragged in, terrified, and afterward is practically kissing the hands of the aides, and they think the treatment's wonderful. That's what brain damage does to you. I knew that instantly. I read about lobotomized patients. I started studying lobotomy on my own, reading the basic books. So I went off to med school, and it began to appear that this was not going to be psychiatry. It wasn't going to have any space at all for anything but drugs and computers. And by the time I got to Harvard for my first year as a resident, and I got there on the basis, you know, I was an okay, I was a good med student, but I wasn't a Harvard med student. I got in there because of all the work I'd done. I knew the director of research personally because I used to go and talk to him about our program and stuff. And this was at the Harvard Mental Health Center, their main training center. And when I got there, they told me they changed that year. I had been interviewed by a family therapist and who loved what I was taught and everything. And they changed that year. It was going to be drugs and computers. A future head of the National Institute of Mental Health, Tony, was sitting there together. I mean, I'd known him when he was a chief resident. And he says to me, Peter, this stuff you're talking about, personality and helping people grow, he says, we're not doing that. We're going to be using computers to give medications. And I said, I'm not. Jerry, I could do that. And I just watched the place become something I wasn't. But I still had enough kind of, you know, good cred with everybody because I was just gifted. I was good with the patients. I was good. My patients didn't kill themselves. We'd have suicides on the ward and stuff like that. I gave them hope. I believed in them. I didn't like diagnoses already. I didn't like drugs already. I tried not to drug them much. And so I got into the National Institute of Mental Health right after my training was done. I was also made as a lieutenant commander in the United States Public Health Service. And I liked it there, and I was asked to stay because I was in the children's group there. Good people, but I could see what was happening. It was just becoming an outsourcing place for the pharmaceutical industry. I could see that. So after they offered me a job, I accepted, and then I turned it down. A week later, I didn't have a way of making a living. But I managed. I got a consultantship in NEA, and then I started seeing some patients. And I remember the only reason I didn't see patients is I thought it didn't meet the standard of changing the world. I thought I had to do something bigger in psychiatry. But my gosh, it's wonderful to have 20 patients in a practice or whatever I had at the time. Eventually I would get up to 30, 35 patients. Now I see 8 or 10. and I said, I'm going to be a therapist, I guess. I mean, I love it. It's great. It's a wonderful life. And then I found out psychosurgery was coming back, obliterating people's brains. And the big connection here, Cheryl, to everything, I didn't know this until Ginger, who came to be with me much later than 1972 when I did this. We got together in 85. We've been together about, I don't know, 38 years married, something like that, 83, 84. And I took on the psychosurgeons. I organized me, the psychotherapist. I went ahead and organized an international campaign, stopped lobotomy from coming back. I was working with congressmen, writing legislation. I was so close to the congressman that one of the black congressmen put my one of my daughters on his staff. And he's the only black, one white person in the whole section there. I mean, I really was doing and working with people. And the effect I had was way beyond anything I thought I could do, and basically stopped almost every project we could find. Some went into hiding, but working with Congress, testifying in courts, writing, speaking, was very good. So people started saying to me, well, what about shock treatment? What about drugs? And I didn't even know a lot about drugs because I was never going to use them. Once I was out of my training, I knew that drugs didn't work. I wasn't going to get involved with them. They were horrible. So I started doing heavy, deep dive research like I do now into psychosurgery, then shock, then drugs. the same kind of deep dive book I do that I've done on COVID-19. And so I got to know the drug companies. I was in multiple lawsuits against them. I was the single scientific expert against Eli Lilly for Prozac, responsible for getting a science together for 150 lawsuits. I mean, I was moving into whole new directions. And then we decided to slow down. We moved from Washington, D.C. to Ithaca 20 years ago to slow down. I was 65. Why not slow down? And Ginger wanted to slow down. She was doing huge amounts of wonderful work with me, running our conferences, doing PR and stuff. And we didn't totally slow down at all. I kept on, doing books and things, but it was a much less tense up here and more relaxed. And then we saw COVID-19 unfolding, and we said, do we really want to do this? And I'm the conscience of psychiatry. They have attacked me all my life. Now they'll attack me and for getting into a field that I'm not prepared for. And that'll do away all of my success and my whole identity. And it was very selfish on my part. And then Ginger started researching. I started looking at things, and Ginger brought me a paper saying that was a scientific paper. She said, honey, this has got to be somebody's fraud. This is not possible. Maybe I'm not understanding it. So I look at the paper. It's a scientific study published in 2015 about making pandemic coronaviruses in American and Chinese labs funded by a place I'd never heard of, NIAID, with a director I'd never heard of, Anthony Fauci. It gives me a chill now. I'm looking at a traitor who's helping China make weapons. What is going on here? Our own government helping China make bacterial weapons. And this particular weapon is a coronavirus 2015 we're talking about. And they're calling it SARS Corona. They've made a SARS coronavirus in the lab. This is called gain of function research, it's called. It's really gain of lethal function. And we looked at each other, and I took a few minutes to mull on my relationship with the power greater than me, and Ginger did too. And we looked at each other and said, we got to do a deep dive on this. This is crazy. And the first thing we did after we used the dictionary to start learning words, my wife is brilliant. She loves nothing more than learning medical terms and doing research. And we're figuring this article out, making sure we're not making any mistakes. We didn't yet know how many other people were already doing this fight. And I did a video that immediately hit 40,000 on YouTube. And we did a blog. And I happened to know a couple of people who were in the Trump circle. One in particular who knew the family very well, and sent this to him, and he said, I'll send it up lines. And 2 days later, Trump canceled Fauci's program of working with the Chinese communists and funding them. We would later do a more deep dive, and we found out this wasn't the only thing. Fauci was funding Chinese communist researchers without even Americans involved. He was funding them. And then he lies more recently to Congress and says, we don't do gain of function research. It's on the names of his programs. And we don't fund Chinese scientists. And we have all the data. It's all in the book. So we thought, my gosh, we're blessed here. We're born at a time that we're alive at a time. We have been allowed to live to a time when what I've been doing with psychiatry is a much infinitely greater importance. We got to start doing this research. We'll get in touch with other people. And then as we started getting in touch with other people, and this is very important for your listeners, Cheryl. So we started to get in touch with other people. We began to meet the most wonderful new friends we'd ever had in our lives. Being in the conscience of psychiatry did not make me a lot of deeply feeling wondrous friends in the medical community. They basically wanted to kill me for what I was doing. stop and shock treatment. I didn't succeed. I'm still going after him. I'm in a massive lawsuit against him now. I'm still doing that stuff. But, I didn't have a lot of friends in the medical community. But there were so many doctors. I mentioned Elizabeth Leave-Leet, who does very similar work to you with women's work. Well, Lee saw this happening, and she was one of the very first people before me and Ginge to say, hey, what is this going on here that we can't treat our patients who come to us to prevent them from getting the preventive medicine to get from getting the virus? And then if we get it, we're not allowed to treat them. We tell them to go home and be sick. What's going on here? And she started the research, and she got Solenko's research on how to treat it, and then she met McCullough. And these three people have written introductions to the book, to our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And all these people, most of them, it's interesting, I'm Jewish, but most of them are Christian, and they all believe in God. Zev Zelenko is an Orthodox Jew. They all believe that America was built in relationship to God, that human beings are treasures, that we're made in God's images, that we have the right to be free and unmolested, and we have the right to govern ourselves as long as we do not attack others. We are free to protect ourselves. They derive these principles, some from the Enlightenment, but really much more from the Judeo-Christian principles. And our founders were deeply into understanding the Old Testament. I mean, they're quoting the Old Testament, even though they're Christians, just majority, as often as the New Testament. They loved the idea that that the Jews went free and then spoke for God to the world. Well, they loved that. And so we now, and this is something to tell your audience, I mean, you can start helping in this area. We have to have, I'm going to be blunt and political, we have to have freedom-loving people in power. Whether you call yourself a libertarian, a conservative, an independent, we have to have people who believe in the individual, believe in freedom. That is not progressivism, folks. I'm sorry. That's Marxism. That's Hitler, closest thing to Marxism, next to Marxism. That's Stalin. That's Mao. That's Xi Jinping, the current head of China. These are violent, violent people. And their stated ideas are, they say, we are materialists. There's nothing spiritual in this universe. We don't believe in God. Official religion of China, literally official religion, is atheism. They're happy to slaughter, manipulate, and in fact to release the coronavirus. Because we did not want to come to that conclusion. By the time the book was getting done, Ginger and I said to Ginger, I said, honey, I think we have to face it. They did this on purpose. They planned this for 4 years. Because we've got documents going back to 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, culminating in 2017 with the complete planning of COVID-19 by Bill Gates, by a guy named Schwab, by organizations around the world, by WHO. We found documents that no one's ever seen before about all this, and that's what is really interested people the most, maybe about our work. So I said to Ginger, we got to say this is planned. She said, looked at me like, oh, dear, honey, I thought you knew it was planned. Well, I don't know how we had a glitch, Peter, on that one. Yeah, I'm going to stop and breathe. Go ahead.
Okay, take a breath. Well, you know, I mean, from early on in your life, you have been a crusader for truth. And I just so respect you because you've taken on, you know, the giants, you know, David and Goliath story, right? And you've been successful.
Yes, and I think I had to have been protected, Cheryl. I should not be alive.
Yeah. You're a man of integrity. I just want to say you're a man of integrity, you're a man of deep conviction and compassion. So that needs to be said, because when we're having these conversations, it's so easy to dismiss information that doesn't fit into the programming that we've had. and who you are and what you stand for is a testament of your commitment to true service to all of us and to finding the truth. So having said that, I want to ask you, I have your research, do we have a pandemic?
No.
Did we have a pandemic?
Yes. The virus is real. The virus is real. It's been isolated and it's gone around the world. But you see, there are untold numbers of coronaviruses. 10% of colds are caused by coronaviruses. And what we don't have is a SARS coronavirus from nature. There is no evidence, not even the small pandemic that there was that people don't know about in 2003 and 4. And they say, oh, see, that's the original SARS-CoV from nature. No, no. I've got convincing evidence from people that even that one was from a Chinese lab. And we now know from our research that lab work like that was going on at the time. So the SARS coronavirus is a manufacture directly in the scientific line of that 2015 paper. And there was a wonderful woman who has, her name is Li Mengyan, who has fled China. She's an MD and a virologist. She fled China. And she came here and she wrote three scientific papers with two colleagues. She's under protection now. She's being supported by conservatives and taken care of, watched over, protected. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And she first wrote that this was a weapon released by China and was done in collaboration with the Western folks who want China to be the powerful nation and America to be weaker. They're just doing so much better in China. There's no regulations, there's slave labor, they get feted, and they think they're loved, but they're hated by the Chinese communists. They may be loved by the Chinese people, the sweetest people on earth, but they ain't loved by the communist Chinese. And these people literally, well, she said she knew firsthand from talking to people, she couldn't talk about that, that this was manufactured ultimately into one of the military facilities. But those are almost indistinguishable from the Wuhan Institute, which is run by a military person, by the head of their biomedical warfare. Why don't they say that in the New York Times every day? Wuhan Institute, run by their best, I think it's a major. It's a woman who was their star biowarfare person. Because all of this is related to biowarfare. I mean, all the work that Fauci has been
doing. Let me just jump in there.
I'll make it more of a conversation now.
Yeah. So for those of us that have accepted the premise that this has been an event that has been, that we have been misguided in terms of the treatments, that science and medicine has been silenced in being able to offer effective solutions in prevention as well as in treatment, and that anyone who is questioning is silenced, is censored. So those of us who are at that point of accepting that something fishy is going on here, something really worrying is going on here, when you titled your book COVID-19 and the Global Predators, what is the bigger agenda? That's the question I've had. What is this all moving us towards? And what is it, I guess more importantly, we need to be able to do to mm-hmm. you know, alter this direction that has been created with a very sophisticated and comprehensive global plan, Peter? This is planned worldwide. This is a global agenda.
Yeah, we actually uncovered in July 2017 master plan from an organization called CEPI, which is the right arm of Bill Gates. And they outline that this is the first level of the plan. They outline there's going to be a coming pandemic, and Bill Gates will be running the distribution and the licensing and all that stuff. And the World Health Organization, with whom they have a memorandum of understanding, all this, it's in a giant slide presentation, PowerPoint presentation, 21 slides doing this. And I found it on the WHO website, and then I did find WHO saying independently, yes, we have a memorandum of understanding, which is the last step before a formal legal contract, legally. So we've got a memorandum of understanding, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to divide up the world to fight this virus between basically the Bill Gates group, which is the global predators that he's kind of leading, and the drug companies, and then WHO is going to take over the leadership of the medical and scientific world. And all this has happened. This is 2017. So originally, there's one of two goals. The first goal is to make a lot of people filthy rich, increase enormously their self-aggrandizement, their wealth, their power, and all those other things. But another key is where is this first announced? Well, Bill Gates announces all this stuff that's going on, that is they're already doing, without naming it, Operation Warp Speed. They're already doing the Great Reset without mentioning it by name. It hasn't been named yet. But they announce it at Klaus Schwab's World Economic Forum, WEF. That's where Gates announces it. They make an announcement that they're setting up this giant collaboration, which is what they want to do now, the world, what they want to call a Great Reset now, what they're calling the Great, what our president calls a Great Reset, what his main advisor on these matters, John Kerry, calls a Great Reset. And that is this collaboration between governments, without the people of the governments involved, huge business, huge billionaires, and communist China. And when they made their basic memorandum of understanding with the World Health Organization, they knew that meant communist China, because that guy Tedros is a criminal. He's not even a medical first person. There wasn't a medical person ever to run WHO. He's a corrupt politician from Ethiopia who's tight with the communists, not with us. And with tight with Fauci, tight with Fauci, tight with Bill Gates. Now, Bill Gates is perhaps himself but a messenger of this larger global movement that no one's been able to quite identify. It has to do with banks, pharmaceutical industries, big in it, but it's just huge. And it has to do with a lot of Republican people who make money investing in China, the Koch family, for example, that Trump took on very early. Very early on, Trump stood up to the main Republican donor, Charles Koch. He said, I don't need you. You're a globalist. He said globalist. He said it. I don't need you. We'll do without you. I'm America first. You're for the Chinese. And he's right. So,
Peter, there have been these global powers that have operated for a long time, pharmaceutical industry, the cartels that exist. So from what you're saying out of your research, a time has come in the history of the humanity that they have decided we need to all come together, bringing our authorities, our powers, our propaganda arms to bring this global transformation, this reset into action. It's like hitting the button. It's time to go.
It's time to go.
Is that?
It didn't. Exactly what's happening. Now, let me tell you the second leg of it. The second leg of it is that it starts at the world at Schwab's World Economic Forum. And that he's been trying to sell forever what he finally names, he's an old guy, what he finally names the New Economic Forum. what he finally names, excuse me, that's his group, The Great Reset. And he titles his book, During COVID-19, COVID-19 and the Great Reset. You see, and I'm saying it's global predators. COVID-19 is global predators. He's saying, no, COVID-19, the Great Reset. He comes out with that book in the middle of 2020. And it's a book about a progressive veneer. Oh, we support Black Lives Matter. We support, you know, women. We support this and that. But we, that's the word. It's we. It's, there's no government involved, no specific government except the Chinese, which they are extremely closely related to, every one of them. We've checked it out as deeply as we can go. And they want to run the government through corporate government fusions. And that's what COVID-19 is in America. It's a government fusion with corporations supporting many corporations, not just the drug companies, but they're where the money starts, infusing money into the drug companies that were picked by this coalition. They were the two in America, Pfizer and, blank on that name.
Moderna.
Moderna. Pfizer. Yeah, they created Moderna in 2009, 2010 for this purpose. And they just poured money into it. It never built anything. But Pfizer and Moderna were chosen in 2017, I documented in the book, to make RNA and DNA vaccines. And that same year, 2017, they're talking about the coronavirus. You'll see it all laid out in the book. So they had it all laid out. They had COVID-19 laid out. They had the funding laid out. The whole works. And I'm the first person to do that. I guess it's because of those years and years and years of testifying against drug companies, studying drug companies. I think that's, you know, I've been a product liability medical expert. I think that was one of the things. But there's other things that, you know, that, and Ginger's been interested in this stuff her whole life before she met me. So,
Peter,
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. I'm just going to keep jumping in if you don't mind, because there's so many things you're saying. You know, you have irrefutable evidence that this has been planned, and there, this, you know, this evidence has been available. Other people are starting to speak out about this has been a global agenda. I think if you just step back and look at what's going on worldwide and how we're being censored and freedoms taken away, you have to come to that conclusion if you're looking in that direction. I have to say a lot of people aren't. A couple of things I wanted to ask you. If you were to give a diagnosis to Fauci, what would his psychiatric profile be, a man like this? How would you define him?
I never do that. I don't use the diagnoses. I call people for what they are. He's a vicious criminal. That's what he is. Vicious criminal.
What motivates people to be treacherous, to unknowingly create a biological weapon that will maim and kill, you know, millions of people? And I don't, you know, I think most of us cannot comprehend that someone would do that.
You have a problem. It's your problem. I'm going to give you a diagnosis. When I first got together with Ginger, incredible idealist. And we differed really very strongly on only one thing. I said, Ginger, and most things she's right about, most of these big subjects. I said, human nature has a lot to be desired, honey. There's no utopias. People are full of evil. It's in the Bible. It's not where I got the idea from. I'm not religious. But Adam and Eve, the whole, the very beginning, you know, the first two people in the Bible, Cain and Abel, first two kids, like Cain kills Abel to get to his father. I mean, so they were trying to tell us something from experience. And this is the case. So we'll look at history and say, why would somebody do that? Why wouldn't they? I mean, Plato announced way back that, you know, we need the philosopher kings like him to run the world. Way, way back. That's a long time ago. Genghis Khan tried to rule the world. Alexander tried to rule the world. Hitler tried to rule the world. So did USSR, and now it's the Mao. Now it's the new Maoists in China want to rule the world. And that's a whole big story, but that's a story other people have told long before me. There's many books, folks, on the, what China's really about. It's about ruling the world under communism without God on a material basis, no spirituality at all. Listen to us, period. And that's just a fact of the way the world is. The unique miracle was that the founders, who are so maligned now, the founders put their name on a document, the Declaration of Independence, which, no matter how rich many of them were, or how many slaves they owned, a lot of them, they would be killed by the king the minute they were caught. They signed their own death warrants because they believed in freedom. A lot of them didn't understand the implications maybe of slavery, but they probably knew, and if you read between lines, you see they knew they were doing away with slavery. There were signs they knew that, that this would happen if you declare all men are created basically equal, and under God, and they have the right to be free. They did this. It's the only time in the world that anybody got together and did this, and then tried to set up a government not to be run by the King of England or by King George Washington or by anybody other king, but to be run by a democratic republic and not even to be run by the people. It was not an unfettered democracy. They wanted the government to do what was necessary to protect freedom. That was the main function of government, to protect freedom. And that's the unique part of history. All the rest is what it's always been. And the uniquest man in the whole world was George Washington, because after he fought for, like, I think 8 years or something, and beat the British with the help of the French and the help of 10% of his soldiers were freed slaves, Washington was, he made slaves full military people. And, you know, made them soldiers. He was an amazing man. And he freed his slaves on the death of his wife. So, you know, that's not perfect, but it's ahead of all the other slavers who never freed their slaves no matter what happened. They gave it to their children, to their grandchildren, slaves. So when Washington won the war, working with a lot of other people, and his soldiers were unpaid and hungry and out of sorts, were not getting any benefits, and his soldiers got together at a church talk about making George the king. This is human nature. This is what's normal. George Washington came in and did something he never did in front of his soldiers. He put on his glasses, made himself look old. And he said, is this what all the sweat and tears and all the deaths of people we love has come to? You're going to get another king? Me? I did not come here to do that. And they wept. And we never got a king. Now we got the closest thing to a king. We almost have a one-party system now. They cheated on the election, folks. Believe me. They cheated on the election. They are oppressing the hell out of the country right now. They put up a man with dementia. And that's not a psychiatric diagnosis. That's a neurological diagnosis. They put up a man with dementia to be their front man. And they're out to get us. And they're working with China again. So that's the story. Let me just, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, as we're kind of heading towards the end of this fascinating conversation, Peter, what is the most important message you want people to learn from your book and from your research?
Okay. So it's one you began to speak. Folks, the history of America is coming to an end. Unless we fight. And I'm not talking about arms. I hope it won't ever come to that. But we have to fight. They are knocking. You may not know this, some of these you folks listening. Many of them you'll be progressive on this station, like a lot of my listeners must be, because I'm on the station. But there's an alliance now between China and the people who are oppressing us at home. It's to crush America, because America is the only thing that stands in the way of the global predators. They say it in their books, America. So join together to fight for the foundations of America. I wrote a little book that not very much read called Why I'm an American, How to Live Like Our Heroic Founders. Get that. Change your life. Realize that psychology is not about what your mother did to you half as much as about you figuring out to be a free person. Become a free person. Stop listening to the crap you're getting and all the things you're listening to. Start using your sensor in your head that says, this person's not out to free me. This person's not out to fight for me. Become like half a million people in America who have a much better sense of this than all of us intellectuals put together, who know they work for a living, who know they're lucky to be able to get a job, be responsible, make money, put their kids through college, who want to do it. They don't want the government to do it. They want to be responsible family members. This is the foundation of America. People want to be responsible and want to be free. And find people doing this, and your life will change. Because instead of those depressed people you know who are wearing masks, who still believe that Joe's a good guy, who still believes that the Democratic Party is really for people when it wants to flood the nation with immigrants to destroy our workforce because that's what China and the globalists want. Nobody who loves you is for you, whether you're black or white or Jew or Christian. Nobody wants to open our southern borders and destroy the strength of America or do business with China and be taken advantage of. They're not on your side. They're for the globalists. That's what the globalists want. So get strong. Start meeting people who are more conservative, maybe even God-fearing, maybe libertarian, but who really believe in America. Learn about the founding of America, and your life will change. You'll find wonderful people. When I was being the conscience of psychiatry, the progressives ganged up and took our own organization away from us. That's who the progressives are. They take things from other people. Then they give you 0.1% and they take 99.9%. That's who they are. Get out from under. Start rethinking. Have a new view of life. And you're going to be happy, even though the world is going to be in trouble and you need to take risks to save this world. You will just be a much more fulfilled. In fact, the instant you get all this straight, you'll feel good. That's why I can do what I'm doing and see such ugliness and be happy and loving. Because once you get there and meet other people and have a surrounding of people who feel the way I do, you're going to fly. That's what I got to say, Cheryl. What do you think of that?
Well, you've given us a lot to think about. And I think that... you know, for everyone listening, whether they have had these thoughts and have done their research and question what's going on, or people listening who have decided that they were going to follow a path that they believed was going to be the prudent one and protect themselves, and which, you know, I've got all my family members on that side, Peter.
Yes.
I think we have to have an open mind. You know, when you understand, when you ask how you've come to believe something, that is a good point of entry into questioning things. Because when you look around and when you look at how you've come to believe something, you know, we realize we've been taught it. We've been taught it in one way or other. It's been given to us in one form or another, whether it's schooling or whether it's nightly news or, you know, your church or synagogue. But we've been taught who we are and how the world works. And I think the biggest challenge for people is to question the nature of what is really happening with the reality that we're in. And that's not an easy thing. And you probably know that more than anyone else as a psychiatrist, to really reevaluate your beliefs about yourself and the world, because that's your identity. Your safety comes from having a pretty sure sense of who you are. And the most challenging thing is to question not only how you've come to believe the world, but how you've come to believe who you are, right? And it kind of goes down to some core crises in life, I guess. And I think that's what you're presenting to us Peter, and you're presenting it in a, you know, very profound and logical and well-researched ways for people to begin to really question. We're at the precipice of huge change, and we have an ability to direct the course of our realities.
Yes.
If we are awake. And if we are awake. And I'm so grateful to what you have done, what you've dedicated this stage of your life to, your courage to stand out, because it's, you know, it's not the the prevailing narrative by any means. But as you said, surround yourself in a community of people that are truth seekers as well. We all want to support that process, right? So I so thank you for your time and everything you've been doing. And everyone needs to go to your website, which is wearethepray.com. If people
That's the
can,
book website, Cheryl. Can I try quickly? Wearethepray.com is the book website. If you're in America and you buy the book, which you'll then get in a few weeks, you'll instantly get the manuscript. And if you're overseas, you can also get the manuscript, and then later we will tell you how you can get the book. But everybody gets the manuscript and for free.
And I just want to challenge everyone to pick up the manuscript, to go to your website, We Are the Prey, and to just be willing to look at the facts that you have presented. Just be willing to have a look. And from there, people can make their own decisions and choices in their lives.
And if you want, Bregin.com is the big website, Bregin.com. But right now, that's a big website. You'll see the book stuff and all. But I would go to wearethepray.com and deal with this issue.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, again, thank you so much for being a person of such of truth and courage, Peter. We're very blessed to have you.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you for having me on your show. And though and although clearly you haven't joined this fight yet, God bless you for being so open-minded, inviting people to think about it. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
You know, I'll just end on this note. There's a quote I learned a long time ago that has always stuck with me, and it's the most expensive thing you can ever own is a closed mind. I think you'll appreciate that too. So,
yes.
So thank you again, Dr. Peter Bregin, for your work and for people. Pick up a copy of his book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, when it comes out. But meanwhile, go to the website, wearethepray.com, and get the manuscript and start investigating more deeply. So until next time, thank you all for being here. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. Go to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, or my website, drcherylselman.com, to learn more and to get all the archives of my shows. Until next week, honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.